Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name's Adam Brimelow, and we're back after a short break over the summer. Excited to let you know that the Provider Podcast will now take on a slightly different approach, providing you with fortnightly episodes. There'll be regular updates on big developments from Chris Hobson, Saffron Cordery, and other senior team members here at NHS Providers. We'll cover key concerns as they arise, while also taking in wider issues and discussions throughout the year. A big thank you from us for listening to the Provider Podcast so far, and we hope you enjoy what's to come. For our next episode, we've spoken to Carrie-Anne Wade, Director of Communications at North East London NHS Foundation Trust, and Daniel Reynolds, Director of Communications at NHS Confederation, on the importance of the role of communications in the NHS, how to support your colleagues in communications teams and across the NHS workforce, and how COVID-19 has impacted on the communications profession. And we also talk about our forthcoming NHS Communicate Conference and Awards. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you. So the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted everyone, really, in the way they live and work. And it's quite rightly, we've seen great recognition, haven't we, of the work and commitment of NHS staff, particularly, I think, those in clinical roles, doctors, nurses, and so on. And there's been less focus on what communications professionals have gone through and what they've accomplished. And Daniel and Carrie-Anne, I'd like to start off this by just reflecting on really what were some of the biggest challenges, but also some of the big achievements that we've seen by our communications colleagues during the course of this pandemic.
Oh, there's absolutely loads of challenges I could mention, and I expect we'll go on to talk about some of them in more detail. But I think most recently, I would say, still managing the communications response to COVID pressures alongside all of the business as usual communications activity that seems to be coming back at full steam, I think, into our portfolios feels like one of the biggest challenges, well, at least for my team at the moment, and I'm sure other colleagues might say the same.
I'm sure you're getting lots of feedback, Daniel, as well on these sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest thing from my perspective in terms of a positive, as Carrie-Anne started with a challenge, is the, if you think about the pandemic, you know, we didn't really have a vaccine, did we, at the start? We didn't have certain treatments. We didn't really have any of that. But what we did have early on was really good communications. And I hate to use the cliched language, but it was really one of our key weapons in the fight against the pandemic. And I think as a profession, we really stepped up collectively, particularly for the bits that the NHS has been responsible for. Now, obviously, there's a conversation to be had about the learnings from the pandemic. But I think in terms of communications, I think the profession has really stepped up. And I think that's kind of paid off now in terms of how we're regarded across kind of chief executives and other leaders in the service.
The real key changes going on in the NHS landscape and communications really at the heart of it. And I think probably it's fair to reflect that the pandemic has probably changed the profession, hasn't it? And we've heard a lot about the recognition, increased recognition of the importance of comms teams. And that's one of the issues that we're looking to highlight, isn't it, at the forthcoming conference.
Absolutely. I guess I would say in terms of recognition, I think you've touched on it already, Daniel, and yourself, Adam, in the question. I think the pandemic has really helped highlight the strategic importance of communications within our own organisations and across the wider NHS. And I think colleagues within our organisations have probably seen now firsthand communicators in action as part of things like incident management teams that they perhaps hadn't had the opportunity to see before. So I think that's really helped to increase the understanding of what it is that we do as a profession and the value that we bring to the NHS.
I would really agree with that. I mean, I talk to a lot of communications directors and chief executives of our member organisations, as you guys will as well. And I've really detected quite a significant uptick, if you like, in how chief executives feel about the value of our profession. I just don't detect that was the case 15 to 20 years ago. I think it has really improved. I think the last 18 months in particular have really kind of shown the value. There was one brilliant quote from a chief executive in the HSJ that said, before the pandemic, he barely ever spoke to his communications director, and now he's the single most important director on the board that he speaks to. I won't name him, but I thought that was really telling. I'm not sure what he was thinking pre-pandemic, but I'm glad he's realised now how important the profession can be, which is encouraging.
That is encouraging, yet we know at the same time there have been huge frustrations, haven't there, in terms of the constraints that many of our colleagues have felt in order to be able to do their jobs as best they can, harnessing their local expertise. And there's that real local versus national debate, which I think is going to be really important at the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree. And I think, you know, there have been some positives. I don't want to say it was all a challenge in terms of us all working towards common goals across the NHS. And I think you've highlighted a real positive, Daniel, around vaccination programme and how we can all work together across organisations to deliver comms and key messaging around those things. But I definitely think there has been some tension too. And I think communications colleagues locally and communications leaders are having to constantly balance that challenge between the fact that we report to our chief executives or other executive directors in our own organisations versus some of the asks from national. And sometimes those asks don't align. And I think sometimes we have to remind some of our colleagues about, you know, where our reporting line sits and the fact that, you know, we are all communications professionals who are here to manage the reputation of the NHS. But if we are employed by a local organisation, it also needs to have that local flavour.
No, absolutely. I'd agree with that. I think very few people would object in a level four sort of major incident to there being more command and control and communications having to be run sort of nationally from the centre. I think that's appropriate. But I guess the key question now is what happens next? You know, what are we at level three now? And then hopefully we'll move beyond that. The key question, the strategic question now for our profession is what do we move to next? And I think clearly we need a better balance between sort of national and local. I think we're all on the same team. I think we want the same things. We should be able to get the right outcome. But I think that's going to take some quite careful working through. But ultimately, you've got some, what I would say to the sort of leadership of the government, NHS England and others, you've got some absolutely fantastic communicators working in the NHS. You know, take advantage of their knowledge, skills and expertise. They're doing it at the front line. And I think it's beholden on us to work together to get that solution.
And I think you made the point earlier, Daniel, about learning from the pandemic. So let's make sure we do that as we start to think about those next steps. And as you say, we're in a slightly different position now in terms of responding to the pandemic. And I think there is a sense about being clear about what's about COVID and what's about other stuff. And, you know, I agree. I don't think anyone would have objected to needing that level of command and control around COVID. But I think potentially there was some creep into other things that perhaps maybe didn't need to be there, because as you say, organisations have really well-trusted, experienced communications leads and teams who are quite capable of kind of managing some of those local issues.
I think the conference is really timely, isn't it, in terms of looking at the strategic future of health communications. We've got fantastic speakers there, Claire Riley, Alex Akin, Fiona Alexander, but also looking at that national versus local sort of tension. Really good that we've got James Lyons coming along, and we'll be hearing also from Amanda Pritchard at the conference. So really strong lineup to address these issues. One area I know that's been a real concern for comms team leaders during the course of the pandemic has been the focus on staff well-being, staff in terms of the wider NHS staff, but also within their teams. And we were really keen, weren't we, to work this into the conference agenda.
No, absolutely. I must admit, I'm quite worried about this because my organisation, NHS Confederation, Adams, NHS Providers, and working with John Underwood at the sort of Centre for Health Communication Research, we did quite an interesting report last year, didn't we, Adam, looking at the impact of the pandemic on communicators. And it was really noticeable how under pressure our colleagues have felt during the last 18 months. Now, clearly, so have all other professions pretty much within the NHS, so we're not unique in that. But what did really come through loud and clear was just the constant 24/7 pressure. You know, we had a big survey of about 170 communicators all saying that they're working kind of on average about 25% more hours per week. And that pressure hasn't really gone away. I think it's been there. And what are we doing now? We're about to kind of head into a what could be one of the most challenging and difficult winters the NHS has had in many years. So I think that is a concern. And I don't think there are simple answers to that. That's one of the reasons why we're putting on the session at the conference. We want to kind of unlock some ideas about how we address that. But I think what we can't just keep doing is, you know, pedaling faster, asking people to do more and more and more, because, you know, eventually people will crumble. You know, we all have our respective breaking points, and I know many colleagues have already reached that. So we've got a duty to kind of look after the profession, you know, and talking to colleagues at NHS England and elsewhere, I know they're very keen to do that. So yeah, really important stuff.
I think there's something when you work in a communications role as well, that you are exactly right, Daniel. We work in a really high pressured environment at the best of times, without adding the pandemic on top of that. And I think we are in a culture of always being on and a lot of digital. And I think that does take its toll on people's well-being. And so I think there's something for us as communications leaders about role modelling really good practice within our own teams. But I also think as communications teams, we also have a responsibility around supporting that wider well-being agenda of our workforces within the NHS. And I guess the thing for me that I've seen in my own organisation is that we have invested heavily in making sure there are lots of different offers around well-being, whether that's physical or mental health for our staff. But I guess the concern I would have is about how sustainable that offer is, because I guess, you know, 18 months into a pandemic, the pressure's still there and it's changing as we head into winter. We look at trying to clear the backlog around, you know, various different services that have been impacted. They're the same staff who haven't had a rest and who have worked really hard. And I guess it's just about how we think as a wider NHS about how we create some sustainable well-being offers that don't just disappear because we think the pandemic's not stressful at the moment.
I think that's spot on, because I think the worry, if you look at it from a public and political perspective, there's a temptation to think that, well, if we give the NHS the funding it needs, then this problem will go away, when we know the single biggest barrier to that is vacancies. So, you know, carrying almost 90,000 vacancies at the moment, even if we got the kind of extra £10 billion a year, even if we got that, we're not going to be able to suddenly magic up new staff. And people need to be taking holidays, don't they? They need to be decompressing and taking time out. And that is the worry. And going into a very difficult winter is only going to kind of exacerbate that. So, yeah, our worry was pretty much that there was a lot of good rhetoric around staff well-being, you know, for several months. That's kind of gone away a little bit. I know loads of organisations locally are still doing that, but nationally the support is, you know, is it still going to be there? Because it certainly needs to.
Some of the big issues which I think we're rightly going to be addressing during the conference. So we're looking, for example, at the changing landscape, the move to system working. There's also going to be a real emphasis at the conference, isn't there, on diversity within the profession, also in terms of improving communications with diverse communities. We're also looking at developments in tech and digital working, the new opportunities that are bringing to bear. There's a real sort of a sense of flux, really, isn't there, in terms of the environment communications professionals are working in, and that brings challenges, but also great opportunities as well.
Yeah, and I think I would see in my role and that of colleagues who do similar roles to me within provider organisations, one of the biggest challenges and equally a huge opportunity is definitely around the system working piece and how we collaborate across our comms community, but also obviously across wider organisations. I think we're starting to see some really good examples of how we can do that. I guess for me, one of the challenges is how do we start to make that thinking around working as a system part of our everyday thinking and part of business as usual, rather than in addition to everybody's day job. And I think at the moment it slightly feels, you know, please do something, communicate something as a system is a sort of add on to the day job. So I think there's some wider work around leadership teams and how we really start to change the culture in the NHS to think a bit differently. And I think that challenge And opportunity, because I think there is a good opportunity to be quite radical in our thinking in terms of the comms profession. But I think it does feel quite complicated, particularly in large provider organisations who are working across more than one system. And I guess the complication for me around that I feel personally is, how do we take our workforce on a journey with us? For example, when I work in an organisation that has footprint across a number of systems, and we're having to try and message out to different parts of the workforce to say, you know, over here, we're doing this collaboratively, but not over there, and we're doing something a bit different here. And it does feel like a more challenging landscape working in a provider organisation than perhaps it did 3, 4, or 5 years ago.
The sort of the prize is there, isn't it, really? I don't think many people would say that, you know, the future of communications practice doesn't lie in more collaboration, more partnership working. Absolutely. It's easy to say and it's really hard to deliver. Now, you know, I work in a national organisation like Adam. Carrie-Anne, you work at the front line. It's a lot harder. We can talk about these things, but you're actually doing it. So, yeah, I'm just struck by, you know, the ConFed has a ICS communications network, and people like you and me and others will be talking about this a lot, but there's a real sort of understanding of how we as a communications profession need to embrace partnership working, system working. It's taken a pandemic to probably really propel that forward, but we're still relatively early on in the journey, to use the cliche. You know, that's going to speed up, obviously, as ICS has become statutory bodies next April, if the bill goes through. So I think there's a lot of optimism there, but I think your point spot on about, I still hear a lot of people saying it's kind of on top of the day job, and lots of ICS is working with their local providers and other parts of the system are trying to come up with their operating models for comms and engagements. But it's not unique to our profession, is it? If you ask kind of the finance community and other sort of colleagues working across the NHS, they'll tell you the same thing. This is just really hard, complex stuff. It's difficult to do, but the kind of reward, the prize is there, isn't it, really? So we need to go after it, and we need to model the right behaviours as a profession.
Yeah, I think we have the opportunity to really lead the way. And I think many of us as communications leads in our organisations and in systems have the opportunity to constructively challenge some of our other leaders to really start thinking a bit differently about how we work and how we manage some of these complexities. So I'm hopeful that there's some, you know, some really good stuff to come. I think it just might be a bit of a change in mindset to get some of us there.
And I guess in some ways, the same is needed in terms of our approach to diversity and the lessons that need to be learned, the lessons that have been drawn out and shown in stark relief by the experience of the pandemic.
Absolutely. And I think there's something for me about that community engagement piece and actually making sure that's really strong. And I think that links with the system working as well. So if you look at that from the point of view of our local communities, you know, are we really doing enough to understand what they need from us, reach in? I know you've mentioned digital, Adam, and again, I think there's lots of learning around digital and how we can better use tech to communicate and engage with communities. But I think we just always have to be mindful of making sure we're asking those people who are on the receiving end of our services about what works for them, rather than assuming that we always know best. So I think there's been some really good examples of community engagement. I don't really like the term hard to reach, because I think if you do it the right way, people aren't really that hard to reach. I think it's about making the effort. But I think, you know, it's flagged up a lot around, you know, behavioural change and nudge theory, that I think as a profession, perhaps we really need to think about how we invest in that a bit more.
I think that point about, you know, the language we use, hard to reach, is kind of part of the problem. And I think, you know, underserved is probably better, but I think that point is spot on. I think, you know, Carrie-Anne's really described the sort of what we need to do more effectively with our local communities. I think the other thing we're going to be looking at, obviously, at the conference is, as a profession, you know, whether we're doing enough to get the right diversity in terms of our workforce. And particularly when I worked, you know, back with Adam a couple of years ago at NHS Providers, we did a really good report, State of Communications. And we found, didn't we, there that, and Carrie-Anne was involved in this, but we found there was it wasn't bad at the lower levels in terms of having diversity, you know, particularly lower bands. But there's suddenly a real problem when you get to the sort of, you know, head of, deputy director, director level. I think it was probably bands 8 and above. There's a real cliff edge, really, a tailing off. And that's not unique to the NHS communications profession. I mean, that if you look at the State of Profession report from the CIPR, other industries are even worse. So this is pretty significant stuff, and we haven't really made progress on it for a number of years. I thought the CIPR's Racing PR report that came out not so long ago you know, again, pointed to some that we're actually going backwards in some areas of communications practice here. So I think we really need to address that. And you know, it's something we're going to be discussing at the conference. It's an area we really need to make progress on.
Conference really, in some ways, is a little bit of an experiment, isn't it? We know from our conversations with colleagues that they wanted this opportunity to share their experiences, to learn about what others have been doing that's worked well, maybe even to have a little bit of a grumble about some of the things that have been going on. That's all part of the opportunity that will be there for them. I'd like to come on to the awards in a moment, which is obviously going to be very much a celebration of what's been achieved. But just finishing off with the conference, probably worth mentioning that it's great that we've got Victoria McDonald hosting it. Obviously, great sort of pedigree as someone who's been working in sort of NHS-related issues for a long time, well known to many of our colleagues who will be attending the conference. But I suppose, you know, if there's one thing that you hope we'll be able to get out of this conference and hopefully in sort of entrench it as a really important sort of landmark event in the NHS calendar, what would that be? What would you hope to get out of the conference and to see it achieve?
That's a good question, Adam. Can we only pick one thing? not wanting to set the bar too high.
Pick a few and then maybe while we go along, we could land on one.
I guess there's something for me. I think the groundwork has to happen in this conference and through the awards as well. And some of the awards categories, I think, will be really brilliant to support this. But I really think there's something for me about harnessing the expertise and experience and skills of this amazing group of communications professionals that we've got across the NHS and really positioning ourselves strategically, really having a strong voice together. And I'm not saying that means we all have to agree with each other, because we all have different experiences and things we want to bring to the table. But to really build on that point that I think we talked about right at the start of this conversation about, you know, the pandemic has really helped shift the view, I think, of communications in the NHS, but it feels like there's still a long way to go. And I would love for our profession to be held in the same esteem as other, particularly corporate professions, I would say, within the NHS. So, you know, hearing from chief execs about what they want from their comms leaders, I think, is a brilliant example of how we can start to really, really think about that. But I guess for me, it'll be what will we all do collectively after the conference with what we've learned and what we've heard to really have that impact?
I should have gone first, because that's a great answer. From my perspective, I want us to be less sort of anxious about celebrating excellence in the profession. I don't know what it is, but as a profession, I felt this myself personally, we sort of shy away from this. We're worried about people thinking, well, we spend too much NHS money on communications practice, when we know really effective communications can improve outcomes for patients, can deliver more value for money for taxpayers. So I think it's about really demonstrating excellence in our profession, the vital role we play and how we can sort of demonstrate that. As we've discussed a lot, we're getting better at demonstrating that kind of impact that we have. We haven't always been great at that. So I think it's a moment for us to really come center stage and celebrate success, celebrate excellence, and deal with some of the big strategic challenges we've got as a profession, because we have many. And then it's year one, isn't it? So I would love this to kind of grow year on year and become a real, really permanent fixture in the annual calendar, you know, and because there isn't really, as Adam and I, when we were plotting all of this with Carrie-Anne, there isn't really anything like this out there. There's sort of snippets of conferences that have a health item here or there, but there isn't really an event like this that pulls it all together with an accompanying award. So we're really excited about it. I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been very struck over the course of the pandemic by the appetite for talking to each other, learning from each other, that sense of connectedness and a sense of a communications, NHS communications community, and that desire to come together. It's a shame, isn't it, that we're still needing to operate for this one virtually, but I hope it will stimulate that sense of togetherness in a way that we can physically bring certainly the conference onto a sort of more of a face-to-face basis for the future, and that people will find it really beneficial, but also give them a real fillip for the year ahead, because we know the challenges ahead are truly enormous. Can we just turn to the awards? Because we were very keen, weren't we, to have that as something sitting alongside the conference where we could be really inclusive, bringing together teams from right across the NHS to really recognise and celebrate the extraordinary achievements of the past year.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the awards event. I think it's going to be brilliant. And I think it's exactly as you say, that real opportunity to celebrate success. Maybe bring our own teams together, but with other communications teams in a way that we haven't been able to do for some time. And I think as comms professionals, we are really, you were right, Daniel, we really cringe at celebrating our own successes. And I don't know why, because we make a profession out of celebrating everyone else's and promoting all their good stuff. So I think it's an opportunity for us to grow in confidence as a profession and celebrate all the great things we do, definitely. But also, I think we're really good at sharing. I think most communications professionals that I know are never afraid to share their good practice, to ask questions, to learn from other comms teams. And I think this awards event will provide a really good platform and opportunity for us to do just that.
Absolutely. I think we've got nearly 300 entries to the awards. I've gone through quite a few of them, and it just strikes me there's some amazing practice there. And I know we're going to be sort of focusing after the conference and awards on how we disseminate that, how we share those insights. You know, this isn't just about one sort of nice awards evening. It's about building a community of people coming together to share insights and best practice. And, you know, that's really exciting. That's important. Because again, if you look around within the NHS communications profession, there isn't really anywhere that does that. And I'm struck by just the quality of submissions when people have been incredibly busy. So thank you to all of them who've taken the time, because there's a lot of competition for those awards. So
I have to say, I think as well, it's been really a really good thing that people have been able to enter them for free. So I know through running a communications team how tiny my non-pay budget is every year, and it gets smaller as each year goes by. And quite often the various other national awards that happen that have communications categories often charge a lot of money for people to be able to enter them, which I think means that some small teams don't get the opportunity to do that. I think that's something that our community is probably very grateful to yourselves for allowing to happen.
I promise we didn't pay Carrie-Anne to say that, but I would echo that.
Yeah, I mean, I think fundamentally as well, it's going to be a great evening. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got Marcus Brigstock, who's going to be hosting the event. I'm sure he'll really bring it to life. There's lots of information that people can get, you know, if they want to go to the NHS Communicate website for all the updates on the conference and the awards. Follow us on Twitter at NHS Communicate and using hashtag NHS Communicate. It's really exciting as we do the lead up to the first NHS Communicate, the first of many, we hope. And we're really looking forward to seeing as many people as possible to participate, contribute, and enjoy it. If you're interested in attending the NHS Communicate Conference and Awards, do find us on Twitter at NHS Communicate, where you can find out more and book your space to join us. NHS Communicate is created in partnership with NHS providers, NHS Confederation, and the Centre for Health Communications Research.